Okay, thank you very much for coming along. It's quite a good turnout, so that's good. Lots of you obviously interested in potentially going on and doing Masters or MA programmes, which is fantastic. I will distribute the slides afterwards because there are some links within them that may be helpful in particular for you to go and look at more detail. And I'm also conscious that some of you here may be thinking about doing an MA in the PACE department. Others of you may be thinking, however, of doing a Master's somewhere else. And indeed, some of you may be thinking of doing a Master's or a postgraduate programme in a different subject entirely, okay? So I'm aware there could be multiple reasons why people are here. So obviously, not every single thing I say is going to be useful to every single person in the room, but I'm hoping that most of it will be helpful in terms of the study choices that you'll be making. So yes, I will be talking a bit about MA programmes in the department. I will tend to focus on MA programmes to do with politics and international studies. However, quite a lot of what I say is generic, because I'll be giving advice on things such as references, on transcripts, on personal statements, that kind of thing, that could obviously potentially be helpful whatever you are thinking of applying to do. I'd probably get, you know, well, there are certain questions I get asked time and time again by students, like, how do I get my transcript, or who should I ask for a reference? I want to try and deal with those questions in particular during this presentation. So hopefully most of you do know who I am, but I'm Justin Greaves, Director of Student Experience and Progression within the Department of Politics and International Studies. And obviously we've been doing a lot of work in terms of listening to students and how students want us to give them the highest level of academic support and advice in your choices. So in your feedback, you've asked for advice on study choices in particular, and that's why we set up in the department an online guide to making your study choices on which modules to take, which assessment methods to choose, whether to do outside modules, whether to do a language. And we've put that up on our website for all our students, so it's easier for you to make your study choices on modules and assessment methods. So we've been doing a lot of work on that. But this, in a sense, is the next stage, because also another important study choice is whether to go on and do future postgraduate study. So that's what I'm going to be talking about today. So there are a number of things you might want to think about. Why undertake postgraduate or master's level study? The PACE MA programmes in particular, I will talk about a bit too. We'll also think about some tips in terms of a strong MA or Master's application. I'll also talk a bit about the PACE double MAs, and then hopefully at the end there will be an opportunity to ask some questions as well. So, if we're looking at going from a BA degree or BSc degree to an MA or an MSc or a Master's, how are we really progressing through those levels? Well, at BA level, you're reading for a degree, you are being taught. Typically 3 or 4 years long. There are student and staff-led components, but very much it's a traditional 3 or 4 year degree where you are being taught material. Clearly, yes, at undergraduate level, there is, at the very top of the mark range, there is potential for originality, creativity, and very much we've had a partnership approach within the department, but nevertheless, that tends to be how a BA programme works. When you go to master's level, it is in a sense an extension of an undergraduate programme, but because it's 1 year, or likely to be 1 year, it is quite a lot more intense. And also, master's programmes will tend to be 12 months long rather than 9 months, which will be a typical undergraduate year. So it is quite an intense period of study, and it's almost always going to be 12 months, and almost always would have a dissertation component within it. In PACE, as undergraduates, it's been your choice whether to do a dissertation or not. At MA level, often it's going to be a mandatory part of a master's programme. So that's something to think about. But obviously with a master's you are stepping up a gear further, and probably there's going to be even more emphasis on independent learning. Obviously, that's part of an undergraduate degree, but the further you go up, the more emphasis there's going to be on independent learning and doing things for yourself. And then, of course, after an MA or a Master's, the ultimate level in terms of academic qualification is to do a PhD, which is the highest level of education. Tends to be, you know, 3 years long typically. And typically for a PhD in the social sciences or politics, you could be writing my PhD thesis was 80,000 words, okay? So that's what you're looking at. The further you go up, the longer you've got to write things. 80,000 words for a PhD. And at PhD level, obviously, then it's, much more independent research. You're not being taught. You have a supervisor who would supervise you for your PhD thesis that could be 60 to 80,000 words. So that's really the kind of steps that you go through. Some of you here may be thinking about doing an MA or a Master's because you want to go and do a PhD or you want to go into academia. But many of you will have other reasons for wanting to do an MA or a Master's, and I'll talk a little bit about those as well. So why do postgraduate study? There could be many reasons why you might want to think about doing it. And I put there, a master's degree may be an advantage in the job market, given the large and increasing numbers of 2-1 honours undergraduates competing for positions. So maybe you end up being better qualified, but not overqualified. I think it's unlikely a master's would have the risk of being overqualified, so I don't think there's too many risks there. And maybe by doing a master's, you further develop all those soft skills that employers are after, such as demonstrating all the skills of communication, of critical thinking and problem solving and so on, that employers are going to be after. However, I do think we need to be cautious, okay? So Chris Manley, for example, who is our senior careers consultant in the department, I've been emailing him about the impact of doing an MA on job prospects. And he said it's not sure it's quite accurate that a master's is a distinct advantage in the job market, at least in the UK context. It is the relevant experience of work and evidence of the skills employers are looking for which are best going to distinguish one 2-1 student from another. Of course, a master's degree may develop those skills, but it won't necessarily give them to you per se. So what that's really saying is that for most jobs, not all jobs, but for many jobs, especially kind of typical graduate recruitment schemes, what they're probably going to be looking at is, have you got a 2-1 degree? What kind of skills have you developed? What kind of work experience have you had? And how you can put that all together in a convincing application and interview. It may be that a master's can help you in that, but of course it's not necessarily guaranteed to do so. So I think in a UK context, a master's may help distinguish you in the job market if you use it in the right way, but of course it's not a guarantee. Outside the UK, I think it's different. Often internationally, a master's degree is seen as more necessary, more valued a qualification. So if you're thinking of ending up working outside the UK, you may find a master's degree more important in the job market than it necessarily would be in the UK. I can perhaps think of another potential advantage, though. Let's just say you end up not doing quite as well in your undergraduate degree as you hoped. Maybe you really wanted to get a first, and you narrowly miss a first and get a 2-1. Doing a master's degree in that context, you could end up kind of doing really well in the master's, and that could offset the fact that maybe you didn't get a first undergraduate level. So I think there are some advantages. The other thing to think about, however, for certain careers, it will be necessary to do a postgraduate qualification. So if you think in terms of law or teaching, certain other professions, it is often necessary to do a postgraduate qualification to then move on into those kinds of careers. So I think we need to think cautiously in terms of when it's going to be helpful in terms of kind of straightforward career prospects or not. However, you may have other reasons for wanting to do a master's. It may be that you are really passionate about the subjects. It may be there are certain areas of politics that have interested you more than others, And at master's level, you really want an opportunity to focus on the areas that have interested you. So the other thing you notice is the further you go up within education, the more narrow and specialised it becomes. So when you were at school, you had to do many, many different subjects. Then when you went, you know, to college or did A-levels before university, you narrowed it down to less subjects. Now at university, you're all doing politics or a joint degree involving politics. At master's level, you're often going to be specialising down even further. So you might want to do an MA in international security or international political economy or international relations or public policy or whatever it may be. So it's a great opportunity to continue studying the areas that you're really interested in. And maybe you feel pragmatically that you don't really want to be looking for work just yet. You've enjoyed your studies a lot and you'd like another year maybe to finalise what you want to do afterwards. So it could be you really want to explore the subject. You're really passionate about the subject. And maybe in some ways that can be a better reason to do it than just focusing on the career side. And of course it can be, it's a necessary route if you want to go on and then do a PhD or go into academia. And so PACE admit around 30 new PhD students each year, of which 25 to 30% tend to have done their MA in PACE. We are finding more and more examples of students who start off as undergraduates, do a master's in the department, go on and do a PhD in the department, and then maybe even end up working in the department. We have academics in the department. I think Chris Rogers is someone that comes to mind, who started as an undergraduate student in the department and is now in the department working as an associate professor. So there are stories. If you love PACE that much, you could stay here almost all your life. Not necessarily the end. So there you go. It could lead on to other things in the department. The other thing, of course, and I talk a lot about this at undergraduate level, is sometimes we underplay, I think, the skills that you're getting from a degree in politics or politics and international studies. We underplay ourselves. And I think this is relevant whether you're thinking of applying for a master's degree or not. So I think, as I said in some of the welcome talks, our employability rate is now better than WBS at Warwick University in terms of our students going into graduate level jobs. And that is because a politics degree is giving you some really important skills that employers are going to value. And often politics graduates are at an advantage than, say, some students from other disciplines, because we are taught to be very critical, we're taught to challenge things, we have understandings of power dynamics in society. Politics graduates are really good at identifying different and new ways of doing things. And these are great skills that you can have when you go out into the world afterwards. And at MA level, I think you have an opportunity to develop further many of these skills. And if you use these in the right way, then clearly they're going to enhance your prospects of employability further. So a number of things on those slides, of course, research skills, problem solving, logical thinking, being flexible, intellectual capability, critical evaluation, working to deadlines and time management. I know you don't like it when essay deadlines are all at the same time, but you can use it to your advantage when you're applying for jobs. Creativity. Creativity, I think, at master's level becomes even more important. Creativity, original thoughts, new ways of doing things. Teamwork, organisation, motivation and drive. Interpersonal communication skills, negotiation skills, project design and management. So enhancing all these skills at master's level that are going to be really useful as you go out into the job market. So what are some key questions you need to think about? Well, one, where do you want to study? We are having increasing numbers of our undergraduate students wanting to go on and continue to do a master's degree in PACE. And there are many good reasons to do a master's degree in PACE, which I'll talk about later. Some of you may feel differently. You may feel you've been here for 3 or 4 years and you want a different experience and you want to go somewhere else. So sometimes there can be different motives in terms of where you want to go and where you want to study. Clearly, it's important to go somewhere that has a course that you like the look of. I think that's really important, clearly. to do your research, but of course you will also be looking at the reputation of those departments as well. So I think that's something really important to consider. So where can you find out information about postgraduate programmes? And this is another area where it can be more difficult than when you were applying to do an undergraduate degree. When you were applying to do an undergraduate degree, you applied through UCAS. It was the same system for everything. So it was very simple, very straightforward. You knew how it worked. You knew the deadlines, etc. Applying at master's level is more challenging because lots of different universities are going to have different ways of applying, different deadlines for funding, for applying, different deadlines for funding, different forms you have to fill in. So really, that can make it more challenging for you because you've got to do all your research, find out about the different places. You may have to do multiple applications as well, which is obviously more time consuming. However, it can also be an advantage because it means you can specialise and tailor your personal statements to exactly where you want to go to. Whereas at UCAS, you're having to do a personal statement to try and appeal to everybody, basically. But at master's levels, you can really tailor it. One bit of advice I would give you is to proofread your personal statements very carefully. So don't, for example, apply to, LSE, and go, I really want to come here because the lecturer in Pace at Warwick is amazing in this area, or something like that. So don't, if you're doing multiple personal statements, do proofread them carefully to make sure you're sending the right one to the place that you're applying for. It sounds obvious, but students have made that mistake before. So do your research, look at all the different websites, look at the different deadlines, plan your time carefully, and obviously as finalists, you're going to be incredibly busy with your academic work as it is. So I think you need to be realistic in terms of how many places you're going to apply for. Think about where you'd really want to go, where you'd be happy. And remember, it can be very time consuming if you're applying to too many places. Of course, you can use elements of the same personal statement, but it is also important that you're tailoring them as well. And also, of course, pragmatically, if you're applying to lots and lots of places, you may be asking people in the department for multiple references, and obviously that's going to become more challenging too. I'm often asked, you know, what's the difference between an MA, a Master's, an MSc, whatever? Often they're slightly different ways of describing the same things. In politics, international studies, they'd usually be called MAs, but on occasion they may be called MSCs. Maybe they'd be called an MSc because they're focusing on a more scientific, quantitative way of doing politics, perhaps. So look into that as well. An MPhil is kind of in between a master's and a PhD. An MPhil is typically 2 years of independent research. In other words, a shorter thesis than you would do at PhD level. And application deadlines, absolutely crucial. Different places are going to have different application deadlines. Oxbridge, for example, tends to have earlier deadlines for master's programmes. Often a lot of places don't really have much of a deadline at all. Their deadline may be June next year, for example. But in those cases, you still need to think about, one, when are the funding deadlines, if you're going to be applying for funding. So there might be earlier deadlines for funding. And also, it may be an element or first come, first served, and once they've filled up the spaces, there aren't any spaces left. So there could be advantages in applying earlier. But it's best to check with each individual institution in terms of what their particular policy is. Certainly, if you're a Warwick student and you want in PACE and you want to go on and do a master's degree in PACE, we are really keen for our undergraduate students to stay on, and we look favourably on your applications. So other things to consider are funding and finances. This is obviously an important issue that comes up, and when I distribute these slides, you'll be able to look at these various funding guides that are available online. So a Prospects Funding Guide, a Postgraduate Search Scholarship Guide, and the Government Loan Scheme as well. So when I distribute the slides, you can look more in detail at the funding opportunities that are available. So the government, UK government, has a government loan scheme, and that's at a glance how it works for this academic year. So they offer student loans for full-time, part-time, and distance learning master's degrees in all subjects, a value of up to £10,600 a year, eligible to UK nationals resident in England, EU nationals residents in the EU, EEA or Switzerland, any UK university, and that's the repayment scheme and so on. So there's the government loan scheme to think about and consider. Now, in terms of why you might want to do an MA in PACE, well, as I said, more and more of our students are wanting to go on and do MAs, and more are wanting to go on and do MAs within the department. And I was talking earlier about how it becomes a lot more specialised MA level, and I think you can see there how it does become more specialised. So, political and legal theory, politics, big data and quantitative methods, US foreign policy, international development, public policy, international politics in Europe, international politics in East Asia, international security, international political economy, and international relations. So I think that's, is it about 10 or 11 different master's programmes we have in the department? And you can see how you can specialise in the area that's of interest to you, how they become more narrow. So they are very competitive programmes that are internationally recognised and much sought after. But, like I said, we're going to look favourably on applicants from our undergraduate students because we want our undergraduates to stay with us. And also, this was something actually that came out of undergraduate feedback. We also offer a fees reduction. So if you're a current Warwick undergraduate student and you get a 2-1 degree, you would get a fees reduction on your MA at Warwick of £1,000. So there's a fee reduction as well. So what's different about research? What's different about doing an MA in PACE rather than somewhere else? And I suppose to some extent you've heard me saying these messages for the last 3 or 4 years. Some of them are similar reasons as to why you'd want to do any degree in the PACE department. We are a very big department. We've got 50 to 60 members of academic staff. We're one of the biggest politics departments in the country. And because we're one of the biggest politics departments in the country, we're able to offer a lot of choice, a lot of modules, a lot of programmes. And that's good for students because almost every area of politics is covered. Whatever you're interested in, we're likely to have courses and modules that fit your interests, which may not be the case in a smaller department. Also, I think within the department, we would say we're very pluralist in our approach. We don't have all our academics who are from the same political framework. Okay, we have a pluralist approach. So in terms of conceptual, theoretical and methodological pluralism, and that can be a good thing as well, because you're encountering so many different ideas, so many different ways of doing politics within a pluralist department. An emphasis on problem-orientated research, on policy-relevant research, and we have big international networks within the department that are global in scale too. And this becomes even more important when you're doing a master's degree. We are a department that has a really, really good reputation when it comes to research as well. So the Political Studies Association said, after the last Research Excellence Framework, that in general, the top five departments at Essex, LSE, Oxford, UCL and Warwick come out top from REF 2014, whatever ranking system is used. So we're doing really well there in terms of research. And as I'm sure you've heard me say before, really good reputation at the moment, number one politics department in the country, ahead of Oxford and Cambridge, in the Times, last Times league table as well. So you may be thinking of going elsewhere to do a master's, which is, you know, your decision, but you won't find a department, at least according to the Times and Sunday Times, you won't find a department higher up than PACE. So it's a great time to go on and do a master's degree in the department. Also, number one research environment, according to the REF, and certainly doing really, really well in terms of top 100 graduate employers. That we were number one the other year, but we're certainly continuously in the top three for that. So a really good reputation. In terms of funding for our MAs, what could you do? Well, there are a number of funding opportunities outlined at that link there, which you can go to when I distribute the slide. So a number of funded opportunities if you wish to go on and do a master's in the department. And these include the Warwick Taught Master's Scholarships, which are to be confirmed for this year, but we hope that they will run. And the PACE MA Scholarships that have a deadline of the 26th of April 2019. And if you click on that link there, it will give you all the information required. Off the top of my head, I can't quite remember the figures that they give, but they do give some support towards your master's degree. And as I said, that £1,000 fee waiver for Warwick graduates who receive a 2-1 degree. Some of this repeats what I've said earlier, but how does an MA differ from undergraduate experience within PACE? Well, one, it's going to be a step up, going to be much more, well, some more expectation of independent study. Typically, you will be doing 3 modules plus an extended research dissertation. And we also have an MA dissertation conference in the same way as we have an undergraduate dissertation conference as well. Another difference at MA level is often, well, certainly at Warwick, it's a different way of teaching. Because at undergraduate level, you've had one, for most modules, you've had a lecture, a 1-hour lecture, and then a 1-hour seminar. At master's level, it's taught in a different way, with 2-hour seminars. So there aren't lectures, but then longer seminars, so you can have longer scope for discussion. So it's far more about the seminars, not a lecture-based approach that you may be used to at undergraduate level. And I think that does symbolise, one, a need for more independent learning, but two, it's a really good thing, because I think sometimes you might find a 1-hour seminar is a bit restrictive. Just as the discussion gets going, the seminar has to come to an end. Master's degree, 2-hour seminars that allow much more developed analysis of what you're actually studying. It's a really, really international cohort from 30 plus nationalities, from a variety of academic and professional backgrounds, a source of riches, and also works alongside a supporting programme of dedicated workshops to enhance skills for academic, personal and professional development. So, what would be the kind of tips that you could give for applying for an MA or a master's programme? And this is kind of generic. It would apply, I think, regardless of whether you want to stay at Warwick, want to go somewhere else, whether you're applying for politics or whether you're applying for different subjects. Well, as I've said, you obviously need to read up on the course, to find out about the course, to find out how the course works, what kind of modules it offers, who would be teaching you, and then to tailor your personal statements to that particular course. People will like, when people read your personal statements, they want to hear how highly you think of them. So in other words, you want to go there because you're really attracted to particular modules, where you really like the sound of certain academics who are teaching you, or your research interests are similar to the research interests of people who will be teaching the course. So trying to tailor it to what they're looking for is really important. So do read up on the courses, who will be teaching them, what areas of research are done within those departments, and so on. Know the entry requirements and the deadlines. So to reinforce, different courses will have different entry requirements, different deadlines. It's important to be aware of them all. Typically, though, for most masters, a 2-1 is required. And for some of the best, highest up places, they may be asking for a high 2-1 or a first. But typically, a 2-1 is required. That links to another question I sometimes get from students about whether the department gives out predicted grades. So the answer is no, the department does not give out formal predicted grades. That's not how things kind of work within the department and at university. So it's not like a school where you are given predicted grades and that determines whether you offer a place at university and so on. So there are not formal predicted grades in the PACE department. However, the people who write your references may sometimes wish to allude or suggest how they think you're going to do. So they may say something like, on the current trajectory of how they're doing, how their work's going, I believe this student is likely to get a first or likely to get a high 2-1 or whatever. So whilst as a department we don't give out formal predictive grades, it's sometimes possible within references for academic staff or your referees to do that in an informal basis. So that's something I get quite a lot of questions on that I think is important to clear up. And just to remind you then that even if the deadlines seem quite a long way away, do plan your time. Remember, funding deadlines could be earlier, and some courses may fill up before the technical deadline as well. And then you have to gather all your application materials. Now, the transcripts, get lots of questions about the transcripts. At Warwick, it's called the HEAR, the Higher Education Achievement Report. So the Higher Education Achievement Report will be your transcript. And on your transcript, it will list all the modules you've taken at university, the marks you've got on those modules. I think it even includes the first year marks, even though they don't go towards your actual degree classification. And it will list your overall class of degree. Okay, so it will say your overall class of degree, say a 2-1, all the modules you've taken, the marks on the modules, and it will may list other things you've done at university as well. What is interesting, though, is that the transcript itself will not list your overall average. If you end up with a, 69.9 or whatever, it will not list that actual overall mark on your transcript. And sometimes we get questions like, oh, we've got a 69.9, can you say to this other university I want to get a master's on that I actually got a 70, okay? Doesn't kind of quite like work like that. It's how that institution wishes to interpret what your transcript says. So that I'll come back to say a bit more about that in a moment. Your statement of purpose or your personal statement is clearly incredibly important. I think I've said quite a lot about that already, but tailoring it, making it specialised. I think I've given a few tips on what you could put there. And references. And then you need to submit the application, including all the documents. So let me just say a bit more about the HEAR. I get a lot of questions from students, and they go that they're just about to finish off their master's application, and they realise in the paperwork that you've got to submit a transcript. And then I get an email that goes, help, what do I do, where do I get my transcript from? Okay? All of you in this room, at some point, should have received an email asking you to register with this company called Grad Intel. Can any of you remember getting an email like that? Who can't remember? It's almost certain you did get one, but maybe it just looked like spam and you didn't bother with it at the time, okay? But you should have all received an email asking you to register for Grad Intel. And they are the company, the organisation that basically run the HEAR certificates, because the Higher Education Achievement Report, the HEAR certificate, isn't just used at Warwick, it's used at a lot of places. So what you will need to do, and I advise you to do this now, rather than in a panic at the final stages of doing a master's application, is get access to your HEAR certificate, your transcript. So you should have had this email, see if you can find it within your inbox somewhere. If not, you can contact the examinations office, aotranscripts@warwick.ac.uk, if you have problems in terms of HEAR registration, or you may be able to go to the website itself and register via the website. But if there's any problems, you can contact the accommodation office, aotranscripts@warwick.ac.uk. And that will then give you access to your transcript, in other words, the marks you've achieved up till now. Clearly, you won't get your final transcript of your final year marks until after you have graduated. I think the final transcript normally comes out, HEAR certificate, normally in August. And I think if you explain to your future universities that you need to wait until August, they're normally fine with that. So that's how that works. So then, another thing that I get asked a lot, which is obviously really important when it comes to applying for masters, is who to ask for references. Because typically you're going to need 2 or 3 references. There may be occasions where perhaps you could have a non-academic reference for some master's degrees, but often students are going to choose 2 or 3 academic references from people, from academics within the department. So who can you choose? Well, one person you could choose would be your personal tutor. Personal tutors, as long as you give them reasonable notice and don't just tell them the day before and so on, personal tutors, as a general rule, have to write a reference for their personal tutees. It's part of the job description. It's in the university guidance that one of the roles for a personal tutor is to provide a is to provide a reference. Okay? So in that sense, they may be a good person because it's part of their job to give references. However, you may think, personal tutors change this year. I don't know my personal tutor very well. Don't have that much of a relationship with them. How can they write me a reference? Well, first of all, obviously try and get to know your personal tutor well. Because if the first time your personal tutor has seen you is when you're asking for a reference, it may not send the best impression. So, bit of advice, if you're thinking of asking a personal tutor for a reference in a few weeks, and you haven't seen them much, see them now, okay? But, to make a more serious point, it doesn't really matter too much if your personal tutor has changed this year, or if your personal tutor doesn't teach you, or if they don't know you that well, because your personal tutor will have access, so they can ask the office for all the marks you've got during your degree, all the feedback you've got during your degree. They've got access to all that information. So even if they haven't taught you or don't know you that well, they can get access to all that information to write you a reference. And they also, the other tip is to make sure you give whoever's writing your reference perhaps a copy of your personal statement, copy of your CV, so that they actually have more information to go on. That's going to be really, really helpful for them to do. Do give them notice. Academics are, believe it or not, quite busy. So do make sure that you give them good notice in order to write a reference. And also do let people know if you're going to want them to do a reference. It doesn't send a good impression if the first thing your personal tutor or seminar tutor's heard is they get an email saying you want a reference and you haven't bothered asking them in advance. So do make sure that they're aware of it. Another person to ask though would be, so personal tutor has some advantages because they can write a general reference about all your work, all your modules, because they've got access to all that information. Another person to ask would be you could ask a dissertation supervisor. If you feel you've got to know them okay, I mean, obviously you might not have known them for that long if they haven't taught you before, you could ask a dissertation supervisor. Often though, students will ask a seminar tutor. So a seminar tutor who's taught them this year or last year. I would not personally go back to your first year. I think if you can avoid that, because they taught you, what, 2 or 3 years ago, that's a bit of a long time ago, try and stick to seminar tutors who've taught you this year or last year. The advantage of a seminar tutor is that they can talk about you directly. They know what you're like in seminars. They're likely to have marked your work. So they can comment more better on your actual work than maybe a personal tutor can. Yeah?
Can you choose a seminar tutor from another department because you're doing just a module?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fine. I think it would depend, obviously, which masters you're applying for. But yes, someone from outside the department would be absolutely fine. The other advantage of a seminar tutor is they can be more specific. They know you. They've taught you. The disadvantage is they may not be quite so general in what they're saying. They may focus more just on the modules that they have taught you for. So often, I think the best thing to do is to have a reference from a personal tutor, but then also maybe a seminar tutor as well. That could offer you the best of both worlds. And if you go to our website, we've got a PACE references guide that explains in more detail who and why you should ask for references, both for master's degrees, but also when you're applying for jobs as well. So there's an online references guide that explains in more detail what I'm saying, the best people to choose for references for masters and when you're applying for jobs. So as I said, clear communication, why, where and when you're applying, and be aware of the different processes for different institutions. In other words, how many references do they want? How do they want you to submit the references? There are going to be different ways of doing it. The statement of purpose, just a bit more on this. Keep it concise, relevant and interesting. Points to consider, to go back to what I said earlier. Why this course at this university? How have you prepared for the course? A especially if grades are in the 2-2 range. Now, if any of you here, as I say, most master's programmes will be after a 2-1. Sometimes they'll be after a high 2-1 or a first. If you haven't done as well in your second year as you would have liked, you may need to somehow convince in your personal statement how that was not gift showing you your best and why you are confident of ending up getting the 2-1 and so on and doing a master's degree. So think about how you could write a personal statement in that kind of situation. It may be you can demonstrate that you did well on particular modules which are relevant for your master's degree that you wish to apply for. It may also be that whoever's writing your references can vouch for the fact that they are confident in your abilities and they believe that you will end up getting a 2-1 degree. So there are ways to get around it. There may be mitigating circumstances that you're able to bring in and mention. And also, in terms of reassurance, it's not a guarantee, but most politics students tend to do better in their final year than they did in their second year. Many reasons for that. It's got more choice of modules, more choice of assessment methods. Students tend to work harder in their final year. I think they may prefer the final year modules to the second year modules. Students often do extremely well in the dissertation module, for example. For some courses, the final year is weighted at 60% as well. That means the final year has more of an influence on your overall mark. And also the degree conventions allow some flexibility if you're on a borderline in certain situations between classes. So there are many reasons to be confident. And how, of course, does doing a master's fit in with your wider plans and your aspirations? And a personal statement is your ideal opportunity to sell yourself, to big yourself up, to explain not only why you are really good as an individual, but what you can bring to that department, what you can bring to that university. And then finally, how it fits in with your wider plans and aspirations. And do pay attention to detail, because things like typos and so on are going to make a difference if it's very competitive in particular. The PACE double masters are a range of double master's degrees which are partnered between Warwick and the institutions and departments mentioned on that slide. How do these work? So they follow a similar structure. It's a two-year master's programme. You're at PACE in year one, where there's a taught component of any of the PACE MA programmes. And in the summer term, you've got the dissertation and so on as normal. And then in your second year, you go on to the partner institution. Taught component of the partner institution MA programme. A dissertation jointly supervised, first supervisor at the partner, second supervisor in PACE. That has a 15,000 rather than a 10,000 word dissertation that's jointly marked with an agreed mark across both institutions. And if you pass both programmes, you get a master's from each institution. Why do a double master's? Well, it makes you more competitive for what might come next, a job or a PhD. It gives you an international experience. It shows you can succeed in two different countries and two different education systems. It enables you to broaden your academic experience and also allows you to take advantage of some internship opportunities as well. There's a really good, well, I think it's quite a good source. It's on the Student Careers and Skills website. It's a really good source of reference on whether to take undergraduate study. So it has some sections on there about why doing postgraduate study can be a good thing. It also goes into more detail about what I was saying earlier about whether doing a master's degree actually promotes your job prospects or not. And it gives some data to back that up. And it also gives further advice on personal statements as well. There's a personal statement guide for the kind of things to put in a personal statement when you're applying to do a master's degree. So when I distribute the slides, please go in and look at them because it will give you a lot more helpful information. You can find out a lot more about the PACE MA programmes on our Study With Us MA pages. So just go to the PACE website, click Study With Us, and you can find out about all the MA programmes within the department. I can try and answer a few questions in a moment, but for more detailed specialist questions on our MA programmes, Please do speak to Oz Hussain, who is our Director of Taught Graduate Studies in the department. So please do speak to Oz. You can find his advice and feedback hours on his webpage. He is in charge of the degree programmes, the master's degree programmes in the department, and is a really good person to speak to. And you can also speak to the MA programme directors as well, if you're interested in a particular MA programme. So any questions that people want now? Yep. Yes, I mean clearly. Well, your first point is it more difficult? Clearly, if you're asking someone for one reference, that's going to be easier for them to do if you're asking them for 10 references. Okay, so I think you do need to have a reasonable limit. I mean, personally, in terms of your own workload, I wouldn't be applying for more than 4 or 5 different places. And in fact, it may be in your interest to apply for less than that. But you are right on your second point that they probably won't need to change the reference that much. And they can probably reuse quite a lot of what they're saying in one reference in another. Generally, that's the case. The problem is that different institutions will have different reference forms with different things they want people to answer. So whilst in theory, in most cases, you should be able to keep the reference the same, in practice, you might have to do, well, whoever's doing the references for you may have to do quite a lot of work to adjust them. And so in some cases, it may be in your interest to apply for less places so that the references are more tailored and going to be more helpful for you, increase your chances and so on. But it depends really how helpful and nice the people are that you're asking for the references for. Yeah?
Can we ask references from someone you worked for example, like within an internship for 2 months over the summer?
Yeah, I think obviously it depends on what kind of references they're asking for, because they might say 2 academic references. And often, an academic reference means someone that can comment on your academic work. If, however, they are being a bit more generic and vague on it, then maybe, and you've done, say, relevant work experience in an area related to that master's programme, then in most cases, I could imagine it could be good and useful to ask someone outside. So I think it's a good idea in principle, depends what they're asking for, though. Yeah.
Can you get them to make changes to the references as a sort of fixed in stone, in a sense?
Well, obviously you can. Well, ultimately it's down to the person writing the reference as to what they wish to include in the reference. But of course, you can. If you have a conversation in a meeting with them, perhaps you can try and steer them in a way that you think, you might think there are important things for them to include in the reference, and you could perhaps suggest that they include them. Obviously, we can't get people to say things they don't think are true, but you may be able to help guide them in terms of what you think it would be useful to have in the reference. And that's another reason to perhaps meet with the people you want to be a referees with personally, so you can have that conversation.
Can you apply to multiple masters in the same university?
I believe you can, yes. It would depend obviously on their systems, but I suppose the question might then be asked, because obviously they're going to find out about it, aren't they, about how committed you are to a particular programme if you're applying for lots of different programmes. That's the only thing I'd be cautious about. Talking of personal statements, I'm sometimes asked, who can you get advice from on personal statements? A number of people. You could ask your personal tutor if they wanted to have a look through a personal statement. You could ask me in one of my advice and feedback hours if you wanted me to look through one of your personal statements. You could ask Student Careers and Skills to look through a personal statement for you. So there are lots of people you can ask to look through personal statements. Often, perhaps the best person to look through them is going to be somebody who is an expert in a particular area you're applying for. So in other words, if you're applying for an MA in International Security, if you can have an expert in International Security looking through the personal statement, then that could be particularly helpful for you. But there are a number of people within the department and the university that you can approach to look through personal statements. Yep.
I was under the impression that you needed first to do a master's at another institution that's as good as Warwick.
Well, nowhere's as good as Warwick, but okay, most places will be a 2-1. Most places, certainly in the UK, would be a 2-1. Internationally, I'm not quite so sure about, but in the UK, a 2-1. But some of the places at the very top may be after a first or a high 2-1. So I think you're right. If a place, if anywhere could be almost as good as Warwick, they might be after kind of high 2-1, potentially even a first.
With a high 2-1, you can.
Sorry?
With a high 2-1, you can.
I think you'd have to look at their own individual web pages, but I think for most places, they would say high 2-1 or a first or something. There may be a very small number that specify a first, but I think for a lot of places, a high 2-1 is adequate. Clearly, the better you do, though, the better.
What is the most important part of my application? Is it the grades or the references or the statement?
Again, I think it depends where you're applying for. I think clearly you've got to get the grades, but I think the personal statement, just as it would be for undergraduate, is going to be absolutely key. But I think they're all really important, but I think the personal statement in particular is important. But getting the referee right, I think, is really important as well. So do pick someone you think you can trust to paint you in the best possible light possible.
Yeah. Are first year marks taken into account at all?
Not really. I mean, I think, well, they may technically appear on the transcript, but no, I don't think they're really going to be taken into account. It's really going to be your second year mark and what trajectory that's going to put you on in terms of your degree classification, because obviously first year doesn't go towards your final degree classification. The only circumstances in which I think it would, and of course I can't necessarily account for every single institution's application processes, but I think that would be my general approach. However, just to go back to what I said earlier, let's just say you haven't done quite as well in your second year because of mitigated circumstances, something going wrong, but you've done very well in your first year. Maybe in those circumstances someone could use their first year marks to illustrate why they believe that they are going to do better in their final year. So there may be ways of using first year marks to your advantage, but if you haven't done well in the first year, then try and downplay it.
Are entrance exams like the GRE, MAP, an important part of the process for PACE?
We wouldn't do entrance exams within the PACE department. I would have thought, certainly for politics master's degrees, entrance exams would be unlikely. Okay. For some other disciplines, it could be possible.
Maybe not, thanks. I think I know the answer.
Do you want to ask it anyway, or do you think you've already worked it out?
I think I know the answer. Like, I was going to ask whether is it worthy of going to any open days by any universities about masters, but I think it's worthy to go.
What's your answer?
It is.
Yes. I think if you can, that would be that's really good. But of course, I appreciate it's very time consuming, isn't it? To be travelling all around. Have I got to finish now? Have I? Yes, I've broken the 5-2-2 rule, haven't I? Thank you very much. I hope you found that helpful. Thank you.